Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of The Owl's Nest, bringing you the bird's eye view of the Overwatch League and all the action that's going down. Of course, today we're going to talk about some of the takeaways from last week's matches, which was the final week for the qualifying rounds going into the May Melee. And of course, you can be sure that we're going to break down what that might end up looking like and who has the best chance of going home the victors. But we're also going to take a break in the middle to talk about the Lone Star Challenge that just wrapped up, determining the true winner, the true Overwatch League team that leads, at least for this year, the Lone Star State in Texas between, of course, Houston and Dallas. But first, of course, like I said, we're going to talk about what went down last week, talk about some of the big takeaways there. And where I'd like to start is, you know, one of the matches that we thought was going to be a lot closer than it actually was, and that was the Paris Eternal putting the beat down on the Dallas Fuel. Jake, didn't we picked this as one of our matches of the week last week, I believe. A 3-0 clean sweep by Paris. Did you see this coming at all?
You know, honestly, I did think Paris was going to win. I would have made them the favorite, but I didn't did not expect it to be a 3-0 sweep, and it was a pretty dominant one at that. So pretty surprised, to be honest. Didn't seem like Dallas played up to their usual par. You know, even Arrow tweeted something out to the effect of, you know, the team not being on the same page, not feeling coordinated, and that's a rough place to be going into the May tournament. You know, the May Melee, you don't want to be a team that is feeling uncoordinated, unconfident. And I don't know how they're really going to be able to turn that around with a 3-0 result going into the tournament. It's hard to imagine them going too far without some, you know, true heroics here as far as turning this thing around.
Yeah, and of course, speaking of them going into the May Melee too, you know, we'll talk about it in a little bit here, but they did also lose the Lone Star Challenge to Houston as well. So you have to expect that probably put a little bit of a damper on their spirits as well. What was it that Paris did here that really got, you know, they really put the Dallas Fuel underneath their thumb?
For me, it was the overall team play from Paris that won this one. I mean, when you get a 3-0 sweep, it tends to be like just outclass on team play. And it did, to me, feel like Paris was just consistently in control of the ultimate economy in this series, not over-ulting, you know, using their ults well when they do, in fact, deploy them. But to be honest, Dallas, like, they didn't put up the fight I would have expected, right? Like, I expected Paris to play well, but I just thought Dallas would rise to the occasion and at least put up some maps, at least, you know, put up some very close ones. But that didn't really materialize this week. So, you know, I think with what Coach Arrow said, I'm a little bit worried about the Fuel right now.
Well, and talking about those who actually did put up quite a fight, last week he also picked out the Toronto Defiant and the Los Angeles Valiant to be another match of the week. And I think one of only two matches that actually went to Game 5, most of what we saw last week were clean sweeps or 3-1s. So what happened here? You know, obviously the Valiant did end up walking away with it 3-2, but Toronto not looking that bad. You know, what was it you took away from this match?
Well, to me, I'm just like, I'm still pretty impressed with Toronto. Like, I do think Valiant, you know, they're the stronger team there. They deserve the win, but, you know, that's the reason I picked this match for match of the week, because despite Toronto having, like, pretty poor results, if you look at, like, mathematically, I still feel like they have the potential, and I feel like, you know, they do have these moments where they are playing really well as a group. To me, my perspective is just that they need to continue refining that, because, of course, they've got, like, the talent in the roster. But I do think it's a roster that has to be sort of workshopped and shaped. One thing to note also is that I think Logix has had particularly great performances, but continued to still be like pretty much playing Koth, right? Like, I think that's mostly his role for the team, is to be in on Koth. And, you know, I have to wonder, like, with I saw a stat there reflected that he has the highest team fight win rate, you know, for the team's DPS. Like, the team's having the most success on those control map types. You know, I have to wonder if they're going to try and bring him in on more maps, you know, see what he can do, because I think there's a lot of teams that have had a ton of success putting in a heavy hit scan focused player. You know, players similar to Logix have had a lot of success on other teams. So, you know, I know Surefour and Agilities are both very flexible, but in my mind, I'm just thinking, you know, why not give Logix a little bit more starting time, you know, see what he can do. Because Toronto's been playing it really close and having their best success with Logix in on control. So I do still think they can somehow turn the season around, but, you know, time is starting to slip away from them.
Well, looking at them on the standings right now, you know, they're at 16-4-8 with an overall record. Technically, that is only about half of their season, so there's definitely time to turn it around. Los Angeles Valiant, meanwhile, sitting at 11th at 5-6. You know, Los Angeles Valiant, to me, especially when you look at how far they've come and being a rookie squad since the beginning of the season, I think they're one of the teams that sort of has that promise. don't expect them, you know, by the end of the season to be in, you know, the top three or maybe even the top five. But, you know, where do you think if the Valiant continue this trend, you know, start to build a little bit of momentum going towards the end of the season, you know, where do you envision the Valiant probably end up sitting in the seeding?
Well, I mean, to be honest, this is already a pretty strong season for them. Like, compared to, if you think back to fan expectations of this team, a lot of people were saying when they dropped some of their, you know, superstar roster from the past two seasons that, oh, wow, this is a huge mistake. Like, there's no way they'll be able to still have a good season. But I think they've proved all those haters wrong, right? Like, this is already a decent performance from them. And it seems like things are continuing to heat up as far as momentum goes. So, you know, bringing in players like, I think KSP is a huge one to highlight, of a lot of people sleeping on him. A lot of people, you know, could have probably picked him up before the Valiant did, but they didn't, right? And now their mistake, I think, is really the Valiant's gain. As this has been a great season for KSP in particular, but also a lot of the other rookie players that the Valiant signed, you know, proved to be really intelligent signings. And to me, you just got to shout out the coach, Packing 10, I think, has done really great work, not only picking up the right players who have that potential and who want to work for, you know, great success, but at the same time actually utilizing them well and coaching the team effectively. So the Valiant, you know, they're like, as far as what you might have expected looking at the roster on paper in preseason, I feel like they're like playing most above their weight class. I think on this pace, like, they're going to make playoffs maybe a little bit, you know, farther down in the standings. But for a rookie squad, I don't think that's going to like get to their head too much. I think the fact that they make playoffs is going to be meaningful as long as they don't like really slip up and, you know, come the end of the season. This is a team where I don't think they're going to care about their record going into playoffs, because they're always going to be able to think to themselves, well, like, we're a rookie team. Like, let's just, they kind of have that playing with house money effect where they can just be confident no matter what the situation, no matter what the previous results. And if they can keep, you know, staying in that mindset, I think this is a team that is going to be potentially explosive come playoffs.
All right, well, speaking of teams that have started to slip, of course, Seoul Dynasty haven't had the best past few weeks, although they did take that 3-2 win over the Shanghai Dragons last week and then come back this week. They end up falling again, another 3-0 sweep, this time the Hunters, I believe it was.
It could be the Hunters effect of, like, you never know what's going to happen with the Hunters. But Seoul is like, I don't know, man. It's really confusing, to be honest, right? Like, the fact that they're able to come out on top of, like, a true five-game series against Shanghai Dragons, mm-hmm. really playing up and beating the team that looked like the best in the Asia-Pacific region. And now they fall 3-0. Like, I mean, I'm not, like, I don't think Chengdu is a bad team, but getting 3-0, you know, is a pretty one, you know, one-sided result, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's just hard to understand this team, right? Like, how can you do so well in one match and then slip up in the next? So I'm wondering if this is a team where, you know, they play up to strong opponents, but maybe they have that Philly season one curse of, you know, getting overconfident and just not playing their best when they play against an opponent that they perceive as weaker, like feeling like they've already passed the test of beating the Dragons. They're not under pressure anymore. You know, that could be where their heads are at. But it has to be a mental thing, right? Because you know that they've got the individual talent and the skill to play at the top level. But to crumble in certain matches and do really well in others tends to be a sign of, like, some mental issues for the team. Mindset, consistency, that sort of thing. I mean, with COVID-19 and everything, it sort of adds extra pressure, especially on the mental game front. But still, like, every team is dealing with similar stuff. So, Seoul, I mean, it's a team that, like, you want them to succeed. They've got so much talent, so many, like, players you love to see, but just it has been so awkward for them, right? Like, such a rocky rise. So it's going to be all about consistency for this team as far as moving ahead.
Well, and they're only sitting at 4-4 in the record for the season, so they have plenty of time to turn it around. And they did also just pick up Slime, formerly of the Vancouver Titans. So what exactly is it in your mind that Seoul Dynasty have to do to start netting themselves some wins and turn this around for them?
Well, I thought Slime's comment was actually really interesting upon joining the Dynasty, which what he said was that Seoul traditionally plays a more passive, reactive style where they're focused on winning the value game and then responding, you know, with, like, the clinical answers to the opponent's aggression, you know, exactly as it happens, which I think is in some cases correct, but in other cases, like, it's just better to be the aggressor. It's just better to initiate your game plan quickly and do it first so that the opponent just doesn't have time to get their game plan off, or they're not quite ready to execute their game plan You know, catching people off guard is a huge thing in Overwatch. You know, getting a quick kill before that player gets their abilities off is a total game changer versus having to grind it out against them and win the value game. So I think to pick up Slime and have that, if he can successfully deploy that new strategy, that new mindset for the team, then that having that extra tool in their toolkit, I think, is going to be extremely valuable. And as far as building consistency, I think it's a lot easier to be consistent, you know, as an aggressive team, as a team that initiates and takes the initiative, rather than a passive team where I think it's extremely high pressure on the individual players, right? If one player is out of position in a passive style, that player is just going to die and you're probably losing. Whereas when you play an aggressive style, I think there is actually a little bit more wiggle room for individuals to be creative and to play their own way, because when you're initiating, you know, the enemy isn't going to be perfect, right? They're not going to be checking all the corners and checking all the flanks the way, if you're playing defensively, that probably is going to happen. The enemy has no reason not to, you know, be clinical. So I think, especially with players like Prophet on the squad, like, I like the idea of Gesture as well. Like, I like the idea of this team being more aggressive. So if Slime can activate that, then that could be a turnaround.
All right. Well, and what better time for them to turn it around than in the May Melee? There was a bunch of bonus wins as well as cash on the line here, but we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the results and what we thought of the docuseries of the Lone Star Showdown. That's coming up next. But for those of you who haven't already, make sure that you're connecting with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Jake OW on Twitter. And make sure you're also over following with notifications on at Jake_OW on Twitch. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, it's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP reminding you to make it blue. Help say thank you to our heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether you're streaming, drawing, singing, cooking, or anything else, showcase your talents and hashtag light it blue. You can find more information at our website, checkpointxp.com.
Hey, this is Norris Howard from Checkpoint XP on campus with your college esports quick hit. The Collegiate Star League Grand Finals are back, and that means one of the biggest events in college esports returns with thousands of dollars in scholarships on the line. The CSL Grand Finals pit the best in North American colleges against each other in Street Fighter V, League of Legends, Dota 2, Magic the Gathering Arena, and more. The games begin Saturday, May 30th, with games running throughout the weekend. That was your college esports quick hit. For more, head on over to our website, CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Owl's Nest. Thanks for watching, and if you'd like to get us on the go, you can also download a podcastable version of our show at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you find your podcasts. Now, the Lone Star Challenge just wrapped up this past week, and come next Monday, the final series of the docuseries will be available over on the Outlaws and the Dallas Fuels YouTube channel. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this, Jake. Also, obviously, you know, the match results and how that ended up going down, as well as, you know, whether or not esports, the Overwatch League, you know, needs this sort of content and what it brings that currently viewers are sort of missing out on without it. So let's go ahead and start with the actual matches here first. Obviously, you know, Dallas had won 3 out of the 4 challenges over the 2-week period, which gave them a pretty big advantage being able to choose the first 3 maps that they played on. What was it that you saw out of the challenges, specifically, you know, between both Dallas and Houston, that you think led to Dallas taking the majority of these wins?
To be honest, I feel like Dallas was just like better prepared and more focused for these challenges. Like they just played a lot better. At the same time, though, I do think the challenges, like the map picks, are pretty significant. We saw a couple times where Dallas looked really dominant on a map pick. Well, not really. Mostly just one, right? Like with Ilios, they just looked insane coming out so hot out of the gates. I was worried about the Outlaws coming into that series because they just got kind of dominated on Ilios. It wasn't all that close, to be fair. So their map picks seemed to be like, oh, wow, this is going to be a big deal for Dallas. And, you know, obviously coming out ahead in the challenges meant that, I guess to some people might mean that, like, there's some individual differences or whatever. But in my mind, actually, the challenges are just so different than the actual game of Overwatch, which, you know, the challenges are very individual, you know, or even, you know, the small team ones are focused on eliminations. There's no objective, really, besides elimination. So it's a very unique sort of game mode that and a play style that just doesn't exist in competitive Overwatch. So I just don't think the challenges like mean too much for the 6-on-6 performance aside from getting those map picks. And, you know, Houston proved that the map picks weren't really such a big deal. You know, even with they took the second map, they took King's Row, which was Dallas's pick, and then they took they almost took Hanamura. Like, they were way ahead on Hanamura, and then you could argue, I think, that they just kind of slipped up in the end. So to me, my thought is just like Dallas just couldn't really capitalize on these map picks the way that I thought that they would, or maybe that they hoped that they would.
So what was it that the Outlaws did? Because obviously, like you said, you know, when it comes to the team fights, when it comes to actually the 6v6, there's something else that goes into the mix that you don't find in the challenge. So what was it that Houston had that was able to put them, you know, just in front of Dallas and net them the win here?
Well, I think to me, there's two factors. Like, the first would be strategy. I think that the Outlaws made some better decisions as far as compositions go. I think that they favored the Orisa Sigma in a lot of situations where Dallas is playing, you know, a very like dive heavy comp. They're playing, you know, like lots of Winston and Tracer and stuff. And even though Decay had some like monster performances on Tracer, like true carry performances, especially on Hanamura, I think securing that defense was like the Decay and Doha show pretty much. Like, they just went crazy. You know, I still feel like the overall strategy of like this defensive Orisa comp is just overall better, at least on a few of the maps. Like Rialto in particular was where Dallas tried to run dive a lot and with pretty limited success, I would say. You know, the Outlaws just felt a lot stronger on that Orisa comp, and that ended up, I think, deciding most of the maps. You know, there's some key moments, like especially when Outlaws started spawn camping on the Blizzard World payload section. That's a huge moment where Orisa Sigma is so dominant. And, you know, Dallas, they're playing the comp too, but it just felt like, especially with Hydration in, like, the Outlaws look better than ever, actually, on that strategy, which was kind of a surprise to me, given that Mooma's experience in the hero.
That was actually going to be my next question to you, because we didn't just see it in the Lone Star Challenge. We also saw it in their matchup against the Vancouver Titans this past week as well, bringing Hydration in over Mooma. And, you know, during the cast, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, you had thought they would probably bring him in to play more of the Sigma, to play more of the Wrecking Ball, but, you know, he was playing both the Reinhardt and the Winston. So what are your thoughts there? Why bring in Hydration on the same characters that we've been seeing Mooma play, you know, for the past three seasons?
Well, I think Mooma is a really talented individual player, so I would say my guess honestly would be that they're focused on stuff that you can't really see, you know, from the caster, from the fan perspective, which is like behind the scenes stuff like communication and strategy, because I think it's pretty hard for Hydration to compete on like raw mechanics on these heroes, given that he's picking them up with like a way shorter time frame. But Hydration has always been like a really intelligent player, I think, in his DPS play as well as his tank play. So I would guess that that's the focus, but it's one of those things where main tank, I think, is a very stylistic role where you can be quote unquote very, very good at main tank, but like if you're just not in sync with your team, it sort of doesn't really matter too much. And you know, you could argue that that's just a mistake to like go for those individual plays. So, I mean, with Hydration, the team looks really solid, looks really coordinated. Even with Hydration making a few mistakes in the match, overall the team had like great support for him and great strategy around him. So, you know, you'd have to like know the team calls and you'd have to know like what's going on in practice to actually get an answer on this front. So you'd kind of have to ask the coaching staff, especially for the Houston Outlaws. But from their results, like, you can't argue with it, right? The team looked really solid with that Hydration Mecco tank line.
That's right. So the other part of the Lone Star Challenge, of course, was the docuseries. We have seen two of the three episodes so far. Jake, obviously, you are featured heavily in them as the narrator for it, and I even got to make a small appearance at the start and the beginning of it. So my question to you is, why is content like this important, not just to the league, but to esports overall?
Well, I think there's two sides of the content. Like, the first is to have this challenge in the first place. I think it's really exciting because, you know, Dallas and Houston have a bit of a special rivalry that is a bit unique in esports, but like, there are other rivalries like it, I guess, but just like to have two teams in particular that have such a fierce individual rivalry, irrespective of the overall league, to me, this is like a perfect thing for them, right? Because the Houston Dallas, they wouldn't play each other too much, you know, in a regular season format, like, you know, once in a while, but no more than they really play other teams. So the fact that there's like a special focus on the rivalry and a special event to celebrate that and to highlight it, to me, is just like, just making sure that you're keeping that fire alive and keeping that excitement and delivering the fans what they want, because I think they're really hungry for more rivalry content. But as far as like to take a broader look, why esports needs more content like this, that is where I would answer. I would look to like the human side of this docuseries, that, you know, you're getting to see behind the scenes for the players, like, what is their life like? How are they practicing, especially during these crazy times of COVID-19, where I think people are hungry to connect with each other and to see what each other's lives are like. And there's a part of that, I think, that's just very human and very intelligible to anybody, whether you come from, you know, inside the scene and you're a huge fan of esports or you don't know much about it at all. Like, either way, I think there's a lot to be had and appreciated from a series that is behind the scenes and gives you like a day in the life, so to speak. So in my mind, like, that human content is something that, the reason it's so good is that like endemic fans eat it up. They love it. And it's not, it's like the definition of authentic, which is a big thing in esports. But at the same time, you could be a total outsider, not know much. And this is like such a great way to get in and dip your toes in the water and start to see like the passion that is behind esports as a first step to getting interested.
That's right. So again, if you want to check that out, you can head on over to the Outlaws and the Dallas Fuel YouTube. That's the Lone Star Challenge. The first two episodes are up, and the third one is coming soon. Again, as Jake said, this is a great time to try to get some of your friends who maybe have had a trouble, you know, understanding exactly what it is that draws you into the Overwatch League. Get them to watch this, and this might be the in that they need. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the May Melee. There are no hero bans this time. All heroes are on the table, and the meta could go just about anywhere. We'll discuss where it could go and how it's going to affect these teams coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Well, we have an unprecedented outbreak.
Thousands of us walking the earth.
We might die at any moment.
Because we're under attack.
In which case, we must act fast.
Doctors are trying their best.
Working long hours and...
always sacrificing.
Their health.
To protect you.
Well, I'd very much like to thank them.
Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
Wait a minute.
What's the prognosis?
It's... still changing.
So we have a novel virus and no vaccine at this time.
What should we do?
We gotta get everybody else back into the houses. We gotta keep them there.
In other words,
this is our lockdown, right? What that means is
stay in your homes, make no attempt to reach loved ones,
and take a long nap.
You can count me out.
You can count me out too.
Some people are immune to good advice.
You know what I mean?
Those idiots.
I just need to make sure you fully understand.
Let's recap.
I'm begging you.
Stay inside.
Wash your hands.
And make sure you've
got 10 feet of personal space around you.
Stay away from me. Stay away from me.
I didn't hear you wash your hands.
So think on this, lads.
When you're home watching TV.
Think about the
medical stuff.
Working for you. So I'm asking you.
Stay home.
I'm in isolation.
To stop the virus.
All right, I'll do it.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
You stay classy, planet Earth.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Owl's Nest. We just got done talking about the first annual Lone Star Challenge, which I'm looking forward to that coming back again every year to see who gets the trophy next. I really hope that if Harsh is going to end up taking pictures of the trophy and sending it to Arrow, that we get to see what those look like, because I'd love to be a fly on the wall when he reads those. Of course, the May Melee is here, guys. It is the May tournament that is going to help determine who gets a few bonus wins tacked on to those final rankings there, final regular season wins and losses. So, Jake, before we actually get into where the seedings are, who's playing who, and where that could end up going, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what you think the meta might end up looking like. Of course, excuse me, there's no hero bans this time. And as we actually saw, we got a little bit of a taste of it with the Lone Star Challenge, Houston and Dallas playing each other without any hero bans. It was actually some really good Overwatch. There was a lot of really interesting comps. There was a lot of hero switching, you know, as they were trying to adapt to one another. You know, we didn't just immediately go back to the, you know, the May Reaper, you know, double shield comp. So what exactly is it that you're expecting specifically to, let's say, out of the Asian region when it comes to some of these picks?
Well, I think there's been this key dynamic that, you know, especially in the Lone Star Showdown, that I think really reared its head, but I also think is going to continue to be something pretty significant, especially as we go into this May Melee, especially with, you know, I would say that to highlight the recent changes in the game, it's like the nerfs to May, which are pretty significant in terms of her ability to control dive heroes and to, you know, enable the rushing Reaper style. And at the same time, you've also got Echo into the mix, who is like a complete game changer in terms of what she offers and the way she plays. So the way I look at the meta in terms of, you know, with no hero pools, is I think there's sort of two poles, and it's just going to be teams sort of swinging back and forth between these poles. And on the one hand, you've got extremely greedy compositions that do a ton of damage at range and can like poke you down 10 ways from Sunday. They have super effective ranged combos, but they need to keep you at arm's length because when you get on top of them, they fail. So that's going to be comps that are based around Orisa and Sigma. They're going to be playing heroes like Ashe, Widowmaker, and Echo even. And then in the back line, you're going to have Batiste Zen as like the ultra greedy, all we do is deal damage. We're not that good at healing or staying alive, but if we just need to kill stuff, we are insane at that. So, you know, that's like the greediest you can go. And then you've also got, you know, variations where you run a Brig instead of a Zen, which gives you a ton more resiliency, but obviously miss out on Discord Orb and a lot of shield break. You know, even occasionally you might see a hero like Ana pop up, but I really think the Batiste Brig or Batiste Zen is going to be dominant to play with that Orisa Sig, because the BAP is so, so good, you know, at enabling the range damage. It's sort of his perfect wheelhouse, and the drone is a pretty great defensive utility as well. So that's like the one side is extreme greed. All we do is range damage. And we just kill people at range, and the enemy never really gets a fight because they're just dead. And then on the other pole, you've got the comp that tries to really prey upon that, and that's like this full dive strategy. So you're going to see heroes like Tracer and Sombra, maybe Echo, but I really think that Tracer-Sombra duo is ideal in, you know, that EMP and the potential for Tracer to pick off backliners. So especially when you see the Zen BAP come out, I think the Tracer-Sombra is extremely effective because it's so, so hard to keep a Zen alive. And if Zen starts getting in this cycle where he's constantly dying, he's never building trance, then Sombra just goes out of control with the EMPs. And we saw that from Doha in the Lone Star Showdown on quite a few maps. So in my mind, the Brig BAP probably is going to be a little more consistent against dive. But that'll be, for me, the question is, do teams want to be the greedy team and like race to the end of who can be the greediest, who can do the most damage? Or do teams want to be the punisher of that and say, you're going to be greedy? Okay, we're going to just pick you off one by one, playing this super mobile dive style where we don't deal so much damage, but we're so mobile, we'll just pick you apart and you won't ever have the opportunity, is sort of the gambit that they're running, that you won't have the opportunity to get that range damage out.
Well, so with that in mind, taking a look at the Asian region, who is it that you're going to favor going into this? I mean, obviously, you know, the dragons have shown that they are nearly unstoppable. You know, looking at the matches that we have, Spark versus the Dynasty to start off, Excelsior versus the Hunters, and then Dragons versus the Spitfire with the Charge getting the first round bye. Where are you putting your money when it comes to this tournament, and who are the best bets?
In my mind, in the Asian region, I do think Shanghai is still going to be a really strong contender, not least because I think that they're just incredibly good, especially at the greedy variants of these styles. So like, especially at the Orisa Sigma, I think Shanghai is like really top tier. Despite going down to Seoul and them playing the mirror a lot, I still think Shanghai is really good. I think like they've just had so much success over a long period of time. And going to no hero pool is, I think, actually going to benefit them. They have really flexible players. There's no issue for them to play any strategy. So to me, like, I'm not worried at all about them as far as like not having hero bans. Like, they don't need it. It doesn't really matter to them. So that's a team, like, obviously you should be worried. You should be looking out for. You should be worried about if you're going up against them. I think some other teams that could be really good are, I think the Charge has had a really great hot streak. And I think they're a team that I would expect to be on the other side of that debate, right? Playing fast dive comps. Eileen, Happy, and Nero are such an insane triplet that, you know, especially Eileen, Sombra, you know, you can put Nero on the Tracer, you can put Happy on the Widow, and you sort of have two different ways to focus your dive style. But overall, I do expect them to be a really strong contender too. And to me, that would be an awesome, like, final in the Asian region, as you've got like the greedy Shanghai trying to outlast, trying to make the individual plays to get pickoffs on those dive heroes, and then you've got, you know, Charge and you know, I would say other teams, like maybe you could put the Spark in a similar category, put the Chengdu Hunters. Well, the Chengdu Hunters are a bit of a special case because they like to play both, which, you know, could be its own unique beast as far as, you know, picking whichever comp they think is better on each map. But I'm excited to see, especially in the Asian region, where like the clash of those styles lands. Do people feel like the Brig and the BAP is just too effective at defending the Orisa Sigma and dive just doesn't work very well? That's sort of what we saw in the Lone Star Showdown. Or do people feel like they can get away with it? They can get through that Brig. They can beat her to her rally charge and just, you know, win off that snowball potential on the dive comp. So that's how I expect Asian region breakdown. I think Shanghai, Charge, Spark. I mean, to be fair, the Asian region is just super hard to call because I actually think it's incredibly close. Like, a lot of these teams are playing at a very high level, and I don't think that there's, like, even though Dragons I would say are the best team, I just don't think there's a big gap the way in North America between like the top echelon of teams and the bottom. I think there's a much larger gap. So it's actually a little bit easier to guess how things are going to break down.
Well, speaking of the North American region, the way that this bracket plays out is also a lot different from the Asian region as well. Of course, it's going to start out with a qualification match between the Toronto Defiant and the Vancouver Titans just to see who gets to go into the knockouts. But what's really interesting about the North American region is that in the knockout stage, your 5th through 8th seed actually gets to choose, based on the highest seed, which teams that they're going to play against. And then even going into the quarterfinals later in the weekend, each of these teams gets to choose from the winners of the past round who it is that they're going to play against. So we actually have no idea what a lot of these matchups are going to look like until the day of. So Jake, you know, taking a look at who our top seeds are here, we have the Shock in the number one spot, the Florida Mayhem in the number two spot. Never thought that I would be saying that. Followed by the Philadelphia Fusion and the Los Angeles Valiant. So, you know, looking at what some of the potentials might be, obviously, again, this is very, very difficult to call. But, you know, taking into consideration some of the insight that you gave to us about the meta, where do you think some of these teams might end up falling, and who do you think is going to end up making it to the semifinals and finals?
Well, I'll just start with, like, the bottom of the tournament, so this qualification match. I do think Toronto's probably going to take it. The Titans have, you know what, one map win under their belt with the new roster,
yeah,
against the Washington Justice, who also kind of just scrambled their own roster, at least for that match. Like, they just lost. They lost Corey, and Stratos was, like, playing even though he's sort of retiring. Like, so then they only got one map win even in that series. So Titans are looking pretty bottom of the barrel right now. I just don't expect them to do particularly well. And I think Toronto, you know, having a close series against the Valiant, who are a much higher-seeded team, I would expect them to take it. This could be that moment, right, for the Titans to come alive, but not really expecting it, frankly. And when it comes, assuming it comes, it'll be a surprise to me, frankly, because until they put up some results, I'm not really going to have much faith in that team. Whereas Toronto, I still think, you know, they had their little bright spots. Obviously, being this seed, it hasn't gone perfectly for them, hasn't gone the way they wanted, but I think they'll take the qualification series. from there in like the next series with all the knockout games, I think the Reign and the Eternal are very likely to move on and continue in this tournament. As far as the rest of the teams, I think this is going to be a kind of open season. A lot of these, like the Gladiators have, you know, they lost to Boston, so that they're feeling pretty bad about that one. Fuel have been all out of sorts, getting rolled by Paris, then just losing the Lone Star Challenge, you know, with pretty convincingly to the Houston Outlaws. So in my mind, you know, even Houston, right, like despite winning that challenge, I don't think they've had like the greatest, you know, season so far. So as far as the teams that are gonna survive the knockout round, I would say Paris and Atlanta are pretty safe bets, but everything else is sort of up for grabs. And there's gonna be a lot of teams, in my mind, competing for those last two spots. It is possible someone could upset Reign or Paris, but I just think it's unlikely. I think probably the teams who go up against them in knockouts are just gonna be eliminated.
So looking at the quarterfinals then, obviously the San Francisco Shock are going to get to take their pick from whoever it is that does end up advancing out of the knockout stages. So, you know, like you said, you know, anything could happen, any given payload, as I like to say. But what do you think are the chances out of these top four teams here? Who's most likely to move on and who might end up, you know, falling victim to whoever it is that they choose in the knockout stages to play?
I think the power of Shock having this first pick is not to be underestimated. They're going to pick, like, obviously the weakest team that manages to survive knockouts. So it probably won't be, you know, like the fact that that team is surviving knockouts means that they're not terrible. You know, they're going to be a competitor. But I just think the fact that Shock is going to just set themselves up with, like, what's their ideal matchup? Where do they think they stack up the best? Like, that level of control from being the one seed, they earned that. And so I'm pretty confident they're going to take the win. Especially Shock has looked really in form, especially for this May Melee qualifier. You know, there's a reason they're the one seed, basically. Valiant, I think, are a lot more vulnerable in that sense, like sort of the opposite, right? They have fourth pick, so they sort of just get whoever is left as far as the knockouts go, which could be pretty tough for them, I think. You know, they're going to get the team that none of the other teams want to play out of knockouts, right? So I think that'll probably be, if I'm right about my earlier predictions, probably be a team like the Eternal or the Reign. So I just, you know, that's not like, I don't think you're psyched on that if you're Valiant, but Valiant, you know, they should be happy that they get a free road to this stage, right? So they'll have even if they don't have the edge of choosing their team, they have the edge of sort of scouting the competitions. And I think they can also guess, like, whoever's playing the best in knockouts is probably going to be their opponent, just because the other teams probably won't pick that team. So for me, my guess, if I were these teams, my guess would be that if the Paris Eternals survive the knockout, that they'll be the team that no one else wants to play, and they'll go up against the Valiant. And I think that'll be a tough one for I think that'll be a close one. I was like, that might be one of the closer matches of the tournament, with both teams, you know, having a lot of good performances recently, and Paris being a bit resurgent, I would say. Like, I'm honestly surprised that they're the fifth seed, just given that, you know, they had all these roster changes. They're sort of still figuring things out, and they still looked pretty solid. They've still got a lot of great results. Valiant, obviously, as well, but yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Philly Fusion have just looked great, right? Like, if anything, I think they even ran, like, some really weird rosters against Vancouver and still look strong, despite sort of keeping the A-team on the bench, just getting some nice R&R, which is just well-deserved with how good the squad has looked overall this season. So, to be honest, the Valiant is, like, the one team that I think it might have a tough time because of that inability to choose their opponent. But I honestly think Philly, Florida, and Shock are probably all going to advance. Florida has looked insanely good in recent times, you know, and Philly has just been so strong so long and are at the point where they're back to their old ways of, like, getting their subs playtime so that they're ready for the future. But when you're in that place, that's, like, an extreme level of confidence, I would say, to be having, to be able to, like, put in players that aren't normally starting just because you want to get them playtime. You're that confident that you're going to win the series no matter what. So Philly, Florida, and Shock, I think, are all going to be advancing. Probably the tougher test is going to be for the LA Valiant.
All right, so final question for you then. Who do you think is going to be going head-to-head in the final bracket here for the North American region?
I'm going to say it's I'm going to do the boring pick, 1 and 2 seed. I'm going to say it's Shock Florida. I think
Shock Florida, huh?
Yeah, I do think the Florida-Philly match, which, you know, based on my predictions, is going to happen. Obviously, there's a lot of ifs to get to that point, but if I'm right about absolutely everything, then I actually think Florida's going to take this over Philly. I think this Florida squad has, like, just really confident, and they've had all these markers of being a truly top-tier team. Not only are they stomping all over teams that are relatively weaker, just dominating them out of the competition, but when they go up against a stronger team, they can like take big hits and come back in these fights. Like they lose a player and they just still commit like fearlessly. They just drop the nano on BQB or something and he just comes out with two picks and it's back in their favor, right? So that's the sort of thing that you need extreme confidence to do. It's like high risk, high reward plays, but they're coming down in favor of the mayhem time and time again. So Florida knows like how to be in those down situations and to make an effective comeback, not just a risky, you know, roll the dice comeback, but one that is actually set up with their whole team and you know, increasing the odds of success because, you know, their success has been undeniable, really. They did drop one map in their last series, but I'm just not worried about that. Like, I still think they're a really great team. But, you know, Philly Fusion are not going to be a pushover. I think that'll be a very close series. I just have a feeling that Florida's going to take it, and Shock are just obviously so good. I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the grand finals.
All right. Well, there you go, guys. That's about all the time we have left for today. Once again, make sure that you're connecting with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Twitter and Facebook. You can find me at Robbie_LandisCP and Jake at JakeOW. And make sure you're following him on Twitch as well, Jake_OW. Jake, thank you so much for your time this weekend. And I'll remember, guys, to always stay on that payload.